places, everyone. Quiet on the set. Curtains in five.
Hello, and welcome back to Footlights, a community theater podcast coming to you from the studios of WVIK Radio on the campus of Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois. I'm Chris Hicks, and we're recording this episode on August 23rd. Joining me today as co-host is the incredibly talented former Footlights guest, Aaron Randolph. Thanks for joining me today, Aaron.
Thanks for having me.
And our guest today is the Performing Arts Supervisor for Davenport Junior Theater, which is about over a 50-year institution, if I'm correct Yes. And his name is Dan Sheridan. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
Now, for the benefit of those listeners who are not familiar with DJT, why don't you give us some background?
Yeah, so Davenport Junior Theater is actually the second oldest children's theater in the United States. It started in 1951 out in the parks in Davenport one summer, and at the end of that summer, all the kids in Davenport wanted to meet all the other kids who thought theater was pretty fun. And so it just kind of grew from there. So today, though, we are currently located at the historic Annie Wittenmyer campus in Davenport. We serve over 2,000 enrollments a year from 40 cities, towns, and communities across the region.
And I think all of them were there this summer.
Yes, I think all of them were there this summer. And then, yeah, so we, through a discovery of just understanding our own program, we recently learned that we are the largest performing arts program in the Midwest, between Chicago, wow, Minneapolis, St. Louis. We're it by far. So it's hopefully everyone in the Quad Cities is just proud of, I mean, we have such a great arts community outside of just junior theater, but just proud of everything we have here.
Well, I have to say, DJT impressed me a great deal. This past summer, my husband and I, foster grandparent, five little girls, okay, the oldest of which just turned 11, and she was in one of the summer programs, and she's on the autism spectrum. Uh-huh. I'm the one who emailed in about that.
Yep.
And I was so impressed with the way the staff handled, because she had a meltdown one day.
Mm-hmm,
And what was really cool is they emailed me to let me know what happened and what they did to address it. And that is exactly why I told Cora's mother that she should, because she was looking at the Spotlight Theaters workshop.
Yeah.
And I said, I know DJT has been working with kids since 1951,
mm-hmm,
and they have probably had kids on the spectrum for years, and they're trained in that. So that was really impressive.
Well, that's great to hear you have that kind of communication. And I mean, at our program, I mean, the number one thing we're trying to do is serve every kid where they are and help develop these communication skills and collaboration skills. We just happen to do theater and dance and things like that. So, you know, we keep our class sizes small just because of that. We really need to know every kid and be able to respond to them. And we're partners with the families on serving them. So.
Now, share all the different performing arts that you provide.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Fun. Wow. In our theater division of the program, we do year-round programming in theater and dance. So we offer acting, improvisation, technical theater, and musical theater. And generally, all of those are for kids ages 3 to 18. Technical theater is a little older. But we have a variety of classes and approaches that we take with different ages. And everything culminates in a performance on stage, which is where you really get to feel those skills. And then on our dance program side, we have ballet, tap, jazz, hip-hop, lyrical, palms, tumbling.
Oh, my gosh.
A wide array. We're one of the
tumbling.
Larger dance programs. Yeah, and tumbling. Yeah.
Well, Cora's little sister could use that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's all skill and confidence building. And
Colette does not need any confidence.
Fair.
She's very outgoing.
Yeah.
So, Daniel, I know the answer to this, but for people who don't know, What's your history with junior theater? Because, you know, you're not just some random person who got involved. Like, it is part of your personal history as well.
True. Yeah. So I actually grew up over by Gunchy's Pizza, West End, Davenport, went to Hayes Elementary School, and I was always interested in junior theater because of the pamphlets that would come home with a clown on them and mm-hmm. like acting. And I thought that sounded like fun, but it was so far away. My parents didn't, you know, it just didn't work out. And I won a free class from somebody who had funded free classes to connect with kids in the community. And
wow,
I won one of those
cool.
classes. And I mean, obviously a lot of things create who you are, but that was definitely a trajectory moment in my life that, cause you know, I started junior theater in 94, 95 as a student. And then I became a teenage staffer, helping run the classes and things like that. And then I would come back in the summers and teach at camp and teach some of the advanced acting classes. And then, took on the leadership of the program in 2008. So mm-hmm. it's been just a long history, and I just think it's such a valuable program for the community.
And in the time you've been involved with junior theater, like how have you seen it like change and grow? Because I remember when you started, like there weren't 2,000 kids involved. It was
how long a lot smaller.
Yeah.
How long
yeah.
have you been with?
Well, I will say that very first season that I was there, so I started in 08, but in winter of 09, Aaron joined us as an mm-hmm. accompanist for yes. our main stage production of Snoopy.
Yes, yeah, I got that's the one and only time I've appeared on the junior theater stage.
That's right.
Dressed as Schroeder playing uh-huh. the piano.
Schroeder wasn't an actual character in the yes. production, so we were like, oh, we'll dress him up over at the piano. So yep. that was nice. But from 1951 to 2005, junior theater was run by two amazing women. Our founder, Mary Fleur Nicewander, and then Bonnie Gunther took over the program. But from 2005 to 2008, the leadership changed 5 times.
Ooh.
And which for a
Yeah.
you know, long stand, and that way it was really hard. There were different directions, and the city was pulling this way, and the nonprofit was pulling this way. And it had frayed, and it had gotten to the point that it seemed like the path was easier to just let it go. And that's really what drew me home, was the chance to, you know, take on this part-time job, 6 part-timers, me and 6 others. We had about 300 enrollments, but now we have 40 part-time employees. We have AmeriCorps members serving there year-round. We've, you know, expanded, as mentioned, to over 2,000 enrollments a year. But we're also doing not just a junior theater, we're also doing outreach. We're going out into the schools. We're meeting kids where they are and providing arts programming, because you can be affordable, and affordable is a very loose term because affordable is different for everyone, but accessibility. Not everyone can drive. Not everyone can get to you. Not everyone has 2 parents or someone in their lives to bring them. Mm-hmm. So it's always about finding the next opportunity to serve more kids. So that's a bit of the growth.
Now, junior theater isn't an entity unto itself. You actually work for the city of Davenport?
That's a great question. So basically 85% of the programming and the facility itself is a function of Davenport Parks and Recreation. So that's where it started we predate the recreation department. The Women's Recreation League is who junior theater started through. But the classes, the camps, the workshops, the facility, rentals and things like that, that's all a function of Parks and Rec. But the nonprofit partner, Junior Theater Incorporated, runs the main stage company, which is essentially our professional producing arm, where we hire professional directors and designers to come in and produce shows with the kids. So an example, you know, might be, we did a production recently called Suzette Who's Set to See. And when you come to see that show, it is all kids performing on stage. Kids are running backstage. Kids are running the lights and sound and calling the production. They're learning front of house management. But the nonprofit manages that. They're just more nimble than a city, quite frankly, on purchasing and contracts and having a steadfast vision for what theater production should be. So it's kind of the professional producing arm, the advocacy arm, the grant writing arm, the alumni relations is all through the nonprofit. So it's a unique model, this this public nonprofit partnership is unique.
And it's free to attend to the audience.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, they can give donations. It's kind of like the couple of the adult theaters that pay what it's worth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we did flip to that model coming out of the pandemic. The main stage productions are, you know, free for all to see now, because when you really looked at, you know, we're charging $7-$8 a ticket, and that's probably a barrier for some kids getting to come to the shows. And it's really not that much money. You know, we had to figure out strategically who to ask, what alumni, what donors could maybe fund the loss of that projected revenue, and then just make the productions free. And then, you know, I'm very proud of Ashley Becker, who's our current artistic director for the main stage. She really pushed to add ASL interpreted productions.
Oh.
So we do one of those for every show now. And then she also pushed for more inclusive audience experience for neurodivergent kids. And we're introducing sensory backpacks this season that a parent can check out. They have over ears, or they have fidgets, or they have sensory things that, you know, I have a neurodiverse child myself. And sometimes you don't just always have that with you, or you don't, you know, go, oh my gosh, this is way louder than I thought it would be.
Yeah, Cora's, you know, very sensitive. She really had a hard time during her musical number this summer.
Sure. Yeah. It's so loud, you know? And so to have those options just readily, it's just all about figuring out how to make sure you're trying to include everybody.
I also recall seeing a young man come in who appeared to have a rather profound disability, and I'm seeing too in adult theater now at Countryside and at Music Guild, they had a couple of players with Down syndrome, and it's like, oh, that is so cool.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, a program that we had for about 4 years at Junior Theater was our Spectrum Theater program. And we had been working with St. Ambrose University and some of their students to create a program for youth with autism that grew into a program for youth with neurodivergence. But I don't know if you've heard of the Penguin Project. Dino Hayes does that in collaboration with Augustana. Dino Hayes from Center for Living, which also offers great youth theater experiences. Mm-hmm. But the Penguin Project had reached out to us about partnering. And what they do, they're an umbrella organization, and they provide a fully realized theatrical experience for people of all abilities, but they work with organizations to make sure that those people have one-on-one mentorship throughout the whole process. So Dino does that now with Augustana, and it's free. And so we really encourage all of our students to go there. And then honestly, our class sizes are 10 students. Neurodivergence should not be exclusive. It should be inclusive. We just include those kids and figure out a way to do it. And if we need more help in the classroom, we figure it out. It's too easy to give yourself an excuse not to serve somebody. Mm-hmm. And if you just say, nope, that is unacceptable, the only acceptable option is to figure out how to serve the kids, then you find a solution. So
how much of your position, because it's performing arts supervisor, how much do you spend on DJT versus other things for the city?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, the vast majority of my time is with the junior theater program.
Oh, okay.
Other performing arts program, I oversee a ballroom program that runs out of Duck Creek Lodge for adults. Or 16 and up. And then, you know, we have magic programs. And then we also are a support mechanism for large parks and recreation events out in the parks. So, you know, audio support and logistical support. Events is kind of something we do in the theater on a timeline, and you're opening and you're going to open. And so we contribute a lot to that. But primarily our impact is through the efforts of junior theater.
Now, I know you got dealt a big blow recently that you're going to have to move out of the Annie Wittenmeyer campus.
Mm-hmm.
I always called it complex for some reason.
No, either way. Yeah, complex and campus. It might actually technically be the complex.
So you announce where you're going?
No.
Oh, man.
No, unfortunately, I can't because we are having to navigate a lot of different elements right now to figure out, you know, people don't realize that we operate out of 13 buildings and 45,000 square feet. And if you come, I'll show you, we use the floor to the ceiling everywhere we can. Mm-hmm. And so finding a location really on an intermediary basis, because the city and the nonprofit city leadership and council are very interested in building a performing arts center and owning the performing arts for Davenport, but for the Quad Cities as well. And I think they should totally lean into it with the amount of continued growth. And success.
Trying to adapt a building to something as specialized as theater would be horribly expensive and time to get it up and running.
Right. And I'm used to sort of expanding at the Wittenmeyer campus where it's like, it's sort of like, it's an old historic building. Do what you want. Make it work. And then I've been learning along the way, you know, well, let's just go in and put walls up. Well, it's not zoned properly. And when it's rezoned, you have to meet these design and build minimums. And then and so I've just been inundated with education about how to look at spaces as possible options and how much they would cost. So, I mean, I can say we're making really great progress in the last 2 weeks, especially about finding an interim location so that we can buy 2 to 5 years to fundraise and vision out what a new junior theater would look like and how that would be created and built.
Now, when do you have to be out of Annie Wittenmeyer?
It's a bit of a moving target. So Chris Ailes is the developer. So I should share the Annie Wittenmeyer campus complex is being redeveloped into housing. I mean, it was originally an orphanage, and so it's senior housing and workforce housing. And it's actually a great continuation of the campus. The campus is deteriorating and the city can't keep up with it. This redevelopment will ensure that the Wittenmeyer campus continues to be a historical piece in our community. It's the timeline that's really tough for a program of our size. So to answer your question, it's looking like we would essentially be done with major programming in May of 2025. And really need to be thinking about where we're going to be programming out of next summer. A huge component of that, though, is the developer is not doing anything with the Nice Wander Theater, but it becoming a residential neighborhood is a little precarious. If you've ever been at one of our events, we park everywhere. We have a parking team trying to help everybody. But it is a beautiful 375 seat, really up to date with technology and equipment and experience, that we're exploring how do we continue to use that theater on an interim basis, but maybe have the educational components and classes somewhere else. And how do all the performances still run and operate out of the theater? Because since we were unable to really find a permanent space in such a limited window, there's also no other 375 seat unused exceptional theater in the Quad Cities just waiting to be scheduled by one organization. Trying to find a space like that,
it doesn't exist.
Yeah. And so we can't really part ways with that asset. It has to be part of our tool set to carry forward.
Yeah.
Okay. Squirrel.
Yeah.
When you were back involved as a student, what did you do? Did you act? Did you work backstage? What?
Yeah, so I started in acting. And then when I joined the student crew, I worked in the props department. So putting together all the props for all the class shows and things like that. And then in the summer, we used to have the show wagon, which a lot of people remember the show wagon in the Quad Cities stage. It would roll up into a park and drop out, and we'd do performances and take it away. And we were 17-year-olds driving 16 passenger vans with giant stages attached to the back of it, like stuff I could not ever imagine doing now. But, you know, being part of that summer road crew and being compensated to go out, compensated, you know, was it $375 an hour, I think, maybe when I started, you know, but you're paid to do theater and you're a teenager. So that was really my foundational involvement, was doing a little bit of everything. And then, of course, back then when you were 17, if they needed a teacher, well, yeah, sure. They would just plug you in and be like, yeah, go teach, have fun. That's not the case now. You know, all of our instructors are certainly 18 and older. But usually, like in our class programs, everybody has their bachelor's degree or higher. It's not a requirement. It's just a coincidence that we have like really passionate, qualified teachers. And that, I don't think people expect 17-year-olds to be teaching their 7-year-olds today. I think that the expectation is different. And the quality of the experience for the kids is different. As much as I thought I was a great 17-year-old teacher, I'm sure I was, you know, woefully inexperienced.
So I kind of on that note, I mean, I think most people who are involved with junior theater know you as like the figurehead of the organization. You play a very administrative role, but that wasn't really, I can't imagine when you were in college that was what you envisioned for yourself, is like being an artistic director or administrator for an arts organization. You know, you were really, I knew you back then. You're a very passionate artist. Do you still have, and I think I know the answer to this, but for the listening audience, like, how do you fill up that artistic bucket for yourself now? Or do you feel like that's something that you don't have the time to do anymore?
You just asked my question.
And there you go. So yes, I mean, when I first moved back in 2008 with such a small team, I mean, I think you also know this, I was teaching 4 or 5 classes a session. I don't teach anymore. I actually can't be paid to teach because of city policy, because I'm full time. So I don't want to take another arts job from somebody who's wants to teach just to not get paid to do it. When there's, you know, not like there's just showers of arts money lying around. And then obviously with the main stage, used to artistic direct and direct and design, and really felt like I was leading a company of students. You're right. I don't do any of that anymore. I really train the teaching staff, and I train, you know, incoming and outgoing coordinators, and advocate for the program. And I deeply miss teaching, and I deeply miss directing and designing. And when I can find, like this summer, I went out to the annual Boy Scout retreat. I've done that in years past, but you know, their theme was D&D. So I took a bunch of masks and props and talked about how you can use stuff from around your house to create the most dynamic D&D characters. And I love it. I love getting out, even if it's in spurts. I love teaching. You know, I went to Grantwood Elementary this summer to read books and do workshops with kids and stuff, and you know, and just volunteering for those. But I will say that the current situation, I've always been kind of in control of my own fate. Mm-hmm. Like, well, I did these things to myself. No one was like making me add the next thing or grow the next thing. This facility move, I always knew we were going to have to move. I never thought it would be now. Mm-hmm. And my goal truly was to stabilize things even more, because I miss that stuff. Mm-hmm. I would like to do that stuff. And the moment has called for a different use of my time. Yeah. So, and it's a good use. Mm-hmm. You know, that doesn't, you know, I am excited though. My kids are interested in D&D.
Oh, cool.
For the first time, which I've never played. And I was like, oh, I'll just dungeon master myself. It's filling a very big artistic void for me of like creating characters and maps and stories and not doing it alone. I'm not some people can play video games alone and feel fulfilled. It's a social experience.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. I've always thought that's funny that there's such a crossover between people who love theater and love like role-playing games.
Yeah.
Because it's really just another form of theater. It's a performance art. It's for a captive audience, very small group of people, but it's the same idea. Yeah. You're storytelling, you're acting things out, you're, you know, getting to make little props. And if you really get into it, you can make costumes.
Yeah,
and,
you know. And the whole deal. Yeah. So, Yeah, so that's been fun. So that's actually been very, I know it sounds weird, but very artistically fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, that part of my brain that's dormant's like a buzz, and I'm thinking about thinking about the map next week for mm-hmm. D&D. It's good. It's good. So, yeah.
So in terms of the future for Junior Theater, like, obviously there's the physical move that'll have to be dealt with. But, like, do you anticipate... It's grown kind of, I won't say exponentially, but it's grown a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that growth like continuing endlessly? Or do you think it's going to reach a point where like the capacity of the organization is reached and it's like, this is how many kids we can reach. And now we've got to have Junior Theater West and East or something.
Like a saturation point.
Right. You know, do you see it as something that can just keep growing on its same trajectory? And is that your goal? Is that what you want for Junior Theater? Or do you think like, you know, we've hit our sweet spot. This is where we intend to be. And this is, you know, we just want to do what we can with the people we've got now.
I think that comes in a few different phases or elements. So like the classes,
mm-hmm.
the classes have peaked out years ago. You know, a fall session for theater, we usually have about 270 kids, and we just kind of consistently hit that mark. Mm-hmm. And we put in a lot of effort to try to get it up a little farther. And then, but usually in the winter, it's around 300, 315. And then in the summer for classes, it's 220 pretty consistently. So yeah. That feels a lot like it's found its balance,
yeah.
You know, and that's the appropriate amount. But then you have something like our camp programs, which are just growing, 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 growing. And we fill them up 8 weeks in advance now. Mm-hmm. And obviously
and
there's
they
more.
Are super well run.
Yeah, they're really special.
I am impressed with how you get everybody moving. And
yeah, and I guess for the audience listening, a junior theater camp, so it's for kids ages 6 to 13, and each week has a theme. So 1 week was comic book creations, and we really explored superheroes. And Jason Platt, who's a local theater artist, but he's also an author, a children's author, he came in on the first day and taught about illustration and how you can become an author and an illustrator.
Oh, cool.
And a theater person. He's all of those things.
Exactly.
And then the kids see him and they get inspired and they develop their own play and they do musical theater performance and improvisation. And at the end of the week, you know, it's like junior theater school from 8:30 to 3:30 each day with a show at the end. It's fun. And there's something about the concentration of time. In our theater classes, we meet with kids once a week for an hour. But when you have kids in a week, 6.5 hours a day, mm-hmm. it's just a totally different thing.
Yeah.
They're both great, but I'm a sucker for camps. I really love our camps. So that's, we could continue to find ways to grow that. But also, too, you know, we could have a long time ago decided to do 10 camps in the summer. We do 5 because we do 1 week on and 1 week off, 1 week on, 1 week off. So my staff survives.
Yeah.
But also, by the end of the summer, the kids who return are getting a little bored, a little antsy. So there's also that sweet spot of, you know, like, leave them wanting more.
Yeah.
You know, truly. Right.
Exactly.
Of like, yeah, you could just saturate the hell out of it, or you could heck out of it. Sorry. You could just saturate it to death or, you know, just keep it high quality.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then now the whole new arm of workshops of, you know, we bus in every kindergartner in Davenport where their first field trip. We go out and do Stepping Stones after school program. We're working with a lead workshop through Rock Island Schools. We work with homeschool associations. They're like, that's a whole different model.
Mm-hmm.
But now that we have a coordinator for that, who just started in February, Kayla Odendahl, we can focus on it and see what it's like and develop it a little more. So it's not like, is it done?
Mm-hmm.
It's what else can it do?
Right.
You know, and I would say we've kind of found that saturation point on the main stage, maybe not with number of kids involved, but expected audiences.
Right.
Like, okay. You know, it's really about this process and experience for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Audiences are great. We want them to come. That's why we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can get super focused on how many people come through the door.
Right.
You know, or.
Well, I don't think you have that problem because when you're working with kids, you've got moms, dads, grandmas, grandpas, aunts, uncles.
You do.
Stepdad, stepmom.
You have the built-in, audience. But the temptation there then is, let's do productions with 45 kids.
Right.
Well, that becomes an entirely different issue.
That would be dilute too
the
overwhelming.
Experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, or we have to include everyone. So let's do two casts with 30 kids in each, and it turns into a different thing.
Yeah.
So it's what do you want it to be, and what do you want the outcome to be for the kids involved?
Yeah.
You know, I was impressed seeing the productions, because we took the girls over there to see the productions. I didn't see anybody forget their lines either.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean,
For sure. That actually strikes me as, you know, you even mentioned, are you talking about camps or the main stage shows?
Both.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah, no, yeah. At camp they do really well too. But on the main stage, I mean, I can't even think of a time a kid's gone up on lines. No. I mean, they're really dedicated.
I wish I could say that.
Right. Yeah, well, and I'm not kidding when I say junior theater has always been my favorite theater company to work with. And and I've worked with a variety of theater companies, and they're good too, but like the excitement of the kids and the willingness to just dive in, explore, and do their best, and they call each other to elevate their work, and it's
good. Well, and it goes back to like the other time I was in here talking about like the concept of a professional theater. You know, junior theater is a professional theater. Mm-hmm. Part of that is you know, that you do have paid adults in there doing the design work, directing. But to me, professional is bigger than just, are people getting paid? It's the approach people take to their work and how seriously they take what they're doing. And are they there just to like have a good time and screw around? Or are they really focused on every single rehearsal, we're going to try and do a better job than we did the time before? And so that professionalism to me is one of the things that why I've been involved with junior theater is I see it's adults who are setting that example for the kids and instilling that in the kids and, you know, pushing them to be professional about what they're doing. And not in like a toxic way where you've got like adults like yelling at kids and being like, why are you so bad? It's in like the most wholesome, useful way that actually instills growth, you know, and helps the kids recognize the value of like hard work and taking pride in what you do. And so that's, I think it is, you know, one of the finest examples of professional theater in the area, you know, from that perspective.
And I think maybe I'm extending this too far, but it's kind of like Davenport Junior Theater is a feeder program to the adult community theater.
I don't think you're extending that too far at all.
Because several of the people we've had in for the podcast have said they started at Davenport Junior Theater, and now they're at Playcrafters and Music Guild and Black Box and all that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's just a great service you're doing to the arts community.
Yeah, and I mean, I'd like to think that, I mean, if you look, like I said, from the 300 enrollments to the 2000 to the, you know, even thinking about all of those part-time jobs, the majority of those are arts, teaching, education jobs, you know, and they're small jobs, like, you know, 10, 15 hours a week, but they're jobs in the arts community. And then also that the residual effect, the downstream effect has to be there. Even if somebody doesn't go into theater, they're probably more likely to go see theater. Mm-hmm. Or donate $25 to Playcrafters when they're doing their drive. And anyone in theater knows, you're like, oh my gosh, thank you. $25. Thank you.
Right.
Because it's not a joke to say every dollar counts.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that's been neat for me being involved over the years is the number of junior theater students who have then gone on to be involved with the program as adults, you know, who have come back as teachers or designers, directors. I'm sure that's been really fulfilling for you to get to know those people as children, then see them turn into well-adjusted adults who you get to work with on a professional level.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably the sweetest part about my job is just getting, you know, I often think about how a high school coach can bond with their kids or a junior high coach, or I'm coaching my son's first grade soccer team because they couldn't find anybody and I said I'd do it. But it should be fun. Practice starts Monday, but we oftentimes get to be part of kids' lives from when they're six.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see them graduate when they're 18. We get to know them for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And even, you know, your kids, and I'm especially thinking of Tori. Yeah. I mean, now that she's a senior mm-hmm. this year.
Yep.
And I was walking out of the office the other day, and she's on the wall when she was a little bunny.
Yep.
yep. You know, and the last main stage show I directed
mm-hmm. right.
was forever ago. Yep. And there she is, you know, and just, I don't know. It's exciting to see where their lives go and yeah. stay connected with them. And yeah. And then now their kids are coming back and doing junior theater.
Yeah.
And so that's a whole new layer of sweetness.
Yeah.
That has to be very gratifying.
Yeah, it is. It yeah. is. And honestly, it's Aaron's right. My job is largely administrative with spurts of go speak about the program, connect with people, administration, go train the staff, administration, deal with this upset parent or administrate. And the real payoff really is in the relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And getting, thankfully, we have three sessions a year and those all end in showcase days. And I get to go and I've never missed a performance. I've seen every single little play and it's fuel
mm-hmm.
to the fire to keep going. Because without that, I mean, it could become very tedious
and yeah.
Lose your way.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite story you'd like to share about something that happened at Davenport Theater?
Well, I have one that's prevalent right now. So I had a student who, I won't share her name, I don't want to embarrass her, but she, when she was a student at junior theater, 11 or 12, I think, she was auditioning for one of the main stage productions. And she got she's a very nervous person, an anxious person. And she just got so upset and she was crying and she ran off the stage in the middle of her audition and went back there. And I said, were you there for this? I don't know.
I went back there
and I sat with her for a while and I talked it through with her. And do you want to go back out on stage? No. Do you want to go back in the audience? No, I don't want anyone to see me. Okay. You know, you're going to stay here. We're going to take care of you. Then went back there and was like, how about you stay after? How about everyone leaves and we go and give this another shot? No, I'm so embarrassed. I was like, just, it will feel good to get up and do it because I know you can. And she did. And she was cast in the ensemble in the production. She earned it. But that student came back this summer. She's going into her senior year at university as a theater major. And she teaching at our summer camps. And I've just always known her to be a little shy and a little indecisive. And I walked into tech rehearsal and she was doing musical theater at the first camp and she's up there and she's like, you can do it again and I believe in you and we're going to nail this time. And very assertive and very like, I was genuinely blown away. Obviously she's gone on to learn a lot. And yeah. so like, but that's a really special moment
mm-hmm.
because, and that's a moment that you could have just been like, okay, well go sit down. You're crying. Forget it. And that kid might not ever come back.
I got truly. Goosebumps while you were
yeah.
telling
it's,
that.
And that is, you might not be teaching, but you are teaching and role modeling and caring.
Absolutely.
So.
And I've said many times that, you know, theater and the arts are there for the kids that aren't the jocks.
Yeah.
You know, and it teaches the same lessons about teamwork and, as Aaron said, professionalism and sticking in there and doing it and doing yeah. your best.
And I put any athlete up there to sing, dance, and act all at the same time in a full musical and not be, you are an athlete.
Right.
You are a different kind of athlete. But what I love, the one, because I've thought a lot about this, I think the one difference between sport and theater is sport, at the end of the day, is about learning and all that, but you're trying to win.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to defeat the other team. And what makes the arts unique is you're trying your best to share something.
Collaborative.
Yeah.
yeah.
And you're sharing at the end of the day, not
right.
beating the other team.
Right.
Like there is no other team. There's mm-hmm. you.
There's just you.
you know, and yep. you know, that's obviously, I guess, the artist's curse as well. Like,
yeah.
you know, like
yep.
there is no winning. There is only improvement and discovery.
Yep.
And
yep.
Or not curse, maybe blessing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you got anything else you want to explore with Dan?
I guess the only other question I have is, you know, if you weren't doing junior theater, if somehow you hadn't come back to do junior theater, what do you think you'd be doing right now with your life? Where would Dan be?
I'm not 100% sure. I think if I could, you know, my dream circumstance in life would be able to be directing and teaching and educating. Mm-hmm. Truly, that would be what I would do all the time if I could.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, I've just developed a real true passion for young people.
Yeah.
And helping develop them. So if I could do that on my own terms, you know, if I could lead that kind of life. Mm-hmm. But also too, I've just learned that I'm a very mission driven, service oriented person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if there's an opportunity for me to serve the community in that way, I'm not trying to get all high minded or convoluted about it. Like, I'm genuinely drawn to those challenges. It's one of the reasons I like being on the recreation team for the Parks Department. It is, recreation is very service driven thing. And we do it on nights and weekends. And then there's other departments who will be like, oh, is that after 4 o'clock? Right. You know, can't do that, you know, but like, we're a service driven group there too. So I'm drawn to those kinds of people and those kinds of missions. So.
Yeah.
Well, I usually close each session with the same question because of your unique type of theater, community theater. What I usually ask is, it's Friday night. Mm-hmm. I have nothing else to do. Mm-hmm. But there's so much available in the Quad Cities, mm-hmm. especially in the summer. Mm-hmm. Why should I go to community theater? And in this case, if I don't have a kid in Davenport Junior Theater, why should I go to DJT?
You'd be surprised. You would be surprised. You would be surprised about the spirit of the storytelling. And, you know, we have certainly had productions. Some productions come together and some productions don't, mm-hmm. you know. But we have certainly had productions come together at Junior Theater that I would hold up to any production in the Quad Cities. I think it is a place to go and experience what you thought, maybe think young people are capable of, and then see what they're capable of there. So it's certainly worth coming over and checking out and supporting. So, yeah.
Okay, great. So this has been Footlights, and I want to thank Dan Sheridan for being our guest today, and I want to thank Aaron Randolph for co-hosting.
Thank you.
I'm Chris Hicks. Break a leg.
Thanks for listening to Footlights, a community theater podcast from the Quad Cities. Footlights is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. If you'd like to explore more podcasts from WVIK or support our work, you can do that at wvik.org or by downloading the WVIK app.